Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Obeisances unto you, O Lord Narasimha, the giver of joy to Prahlad Maharaj. Your nails are chisels on the stone-like chest of Hiranyakashipu. Here, there, everywhere is Lord Narasimha. Wherever I go, there is Lord Narasimha. Externally, internally in the heart, there is Lord Narasimha. I surrender to Lord Narasimha, the origin, the supreme refuge. O Keshava, O Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, you have assumed the form of half man, half lion. All glories to you. Just as one can easily crush a wasp between one's fingernails, so in the same way, the body of the wasp-like demon Hiranyakashipu has been ripped apart by the wonderful pointed nails on your beautiful lotus hands. Lord Narasimha is with Lakshmi Devi. All glories to Lord Narasimha. Again and again, glories to Lord Narasimha. All glories to the Lord of Prahlad Maharaj. The Lord is the bee of the lotus-like face of the goddess of fortune. Trinadapi sunichena tarariva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari harinama 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 ivakivalam kalo nastyeva 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 gatiranyata. So, this Leela of Lord Narasimha, one of the Leela avatars of the Lord, Lord Brahma in second canto, gives a list of scheduled incarnations with specific functions. One of those is the appearance of Lord Narasimha. There are six kinds of avatars. One of them is Leela or pastime incarnations. And the way I look at it, this Leela of Lord Narasimha, there are many, many lessons to be learned by us. So many themes and very important Vaishnava conclusions to be gleaned from the entire narration. Because in the seventh canto, the whole story of Narasimha Prahlad takes up 10 chapters. So there's quite a lot of information and very valuable information and knowledge. I look at it that, and the theme of the seminar is how the Lord protects his devotees. And if we look to the Bhagavad Gita, two verses seem very applicable, both in the ninth chapter, separated by one verse apart. Samoham sarva bhuteshu na me dveshyo stina priya ye bhajanti tu mang bhaktya Mayi te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, Krishna says, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. And that is how the seventh canto begins. The first chapter is entitled, The Supreme Lord is Equal to All. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The reciprocal nature of Krishna consciousness. It's not a one-way street. As you surrender and serve the Lord reciprocates. Another major theme of Bhagavad Gita. Ye tang mang parpadyante tang stataiva bhajamyaham mama vatmanu vartante manusha parata sarvashaha. Krishna says, as you surrender to me, I reciprocate. And only one instance that this verse does not hold true. Who knows? Anybody know the only time where this verse that I reciprocate does not hold up? I'm sure you know.
Putana.
Was that?
Putana.
No, not Putana. Gopis. Krishna himself said, I cannot repay you. By his own words, Krishna said, even within a lifetime of Brahma, I cannot repay you. And this is also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnadas Kaviraj brings this point out. Okay. Then the next verse, so in between this verse is another verse, then this one, the famous, Kaunteya Pratijanihi Na me bhakta pranasyati. This is Prahlad. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly. My devotee never perishes. And as we hear in the next 3 days, we're going to be hearing all about Prahlad. This will become very apparent. My devotee never perishes. So if you're ready to proceed, then please affirm that by chanting loudly the Maha Mantra for me, please.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bhakta Peter, I look forward to preaching with you when you come to Los Angeles. As your desire, right? I look forward to that. As we say in California, we will blow their minds. So the first chapter of the seventh canto is entitled, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. Starting with the fifth canto, Prabhupada started to compose chapter summaries for each chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. We see also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he did the same thing, wrote chapter summaries. And for me, I find these chapter summaries very, very valuable in terms of refreshing and also in terms of preaching. In this chapter, in response to a question by Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadeva Goswami gives his conclusions concerning how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although the Supersoul, friend and protector of everyone, killed the demons for the sake of Indra, the King of Heaven. In his statements, he totally refutes the arguments of people in general who accuse the Supreme Lord of partiality. Shukadeva Goswami proves that because the body of the conditioned soul is infected by the three qualities of nature, dualities arise, such as enmity and friendship, attachment and detachment. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, there are no such dualities. Even eternal time cannot control the activities of the Lord. Eternal time is created by the Lord. And last night, what did we hear Rukmini say? She said the eternal kind comes from his eyebrows. That's what Rukmini said. So, and it acts under his control. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore, is always transcendental to the influence of the modes of nature. And that is something that Lord Chaitanya emphasized. That as soon as you think that there's a possibility that God can be influenced by the modes of nature, you become an atheist. This is very important. And if it's not understood, then Krishna's Leela will also be confusing to you. Because you'll see in Krishna Leela, Krishna does things that apparently seem irreligious or immoral. But as soon as you understand this very basic point, that there is no question of contamination, no question of sin, and no question of material influence on the Lord, then your understanding is going to go very smoothly. So, let's continue. The Lord's... He is always transcendental to the influence of the modes of nature, or the Lord's external energy, which acts in creation and annihilation. Thus, all the demons killed by the Supreme Lord attain salvation immediately. In this first opening statement, is the Supreme Lord equal? Shukadeva Goswami says, what happens? The demons are influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. So when those modes are prominent, they flourish. The demigods are influenced by goodness. So when the mode of goodness is prominent, they flourish. That's all that's happening in this material world. Depending on the mode of nature you're situated in, you flourish or you diminish. So in terms of the demons, and we know these modes are constantly in flux. Constantly. So one other thing that Shukadeva Goswami points out, the time factor enhances the mode of goodness. So it's just a matter of time that the demigods will become victorious. Now, if you think about this, how the time element enhances the mode of goodness, that is a very important key for us. We learn from the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18, the three kinds of happiness. Notice the mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning, but later turns to nectar. Why? That time factor. The mode of goodness is enhanced by the time factor. So, when you are starting out in Krishna consciousness, it can be a little rough. It can be a little difficult. Why? You're trying to overcome those lower modes. But you stick with the process. You keep yourself in the mode of goodness. Little by little, it becomes smooth sailing. And before you know it, you are just gliding in Krishna consciousness. So, that is why you'll see Krishna says in the Uddhava Gita, the mode of ignorance, despise it. The mode of passion, be indifferent. Mode of goodness, foster. You should always foster things in your life in the mode of goodness. Because why? From the mode of goodness, you'll spring to the transcendental plane. And when you're on the transcendental plane, Haribol, the mode of bliss. Kevala Anandakanda, simply joyful. Okay, let's continue. The second question raised by Parikshit Maharaj concerns how Shishupal, we heard about him yesterday. Somebody defeated him yesterday. Who was it? No, Krishna. Shishupal was supposed to marry Rukmini. Didn't turn out that way, did it? Krishna came and took her away. Shishupal, although inimical toward Krishna from his very childhood and always blaspheming Krishna, he attained salvation and oneness when Krishna killed him. So this seventh canto takes place at that event, the Rajasuya sacrifice. And Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna. There was about to be a bloodbath. Krishna saved the scene, took out his Sudarshan Chakra and decapitated Shishupal. And everyone saw the spirit soul shoot out like a meteor from Shishupal's body and entered Krishna's body like a meteor. Yudhishthira was there. Of course, it was his Rajasuya sacrifice. But it appears he was very near Narada Muni. He asked him, what was that? What, can you explain that? And that's how seventh canto begins. Because Narada explains, as we're reading here, Shukadeva Goswami explains that because of their offenses at the feet of devotees, two attendants of the Lord in Vaikuntha named Jai and Vijay became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha in Satya Yuga, Ravan in Kumbhakarna in the next Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Shishupal and Dantavakra at the end of Dwarapa Yuga. Three births they had to take as demons. Because of their fruitive acts, Jai and Vijay agreed to become the Lord's enemies. And when killed in that mentality, they attained salvation in oneness. Thus, even if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in envy, one attains salvation. Therefore, the Lord is all good. I've given this example so many times. You know, when there's a big enemy, big, big enemy, like for America, it was Osama bin Laden. And for years, everybody was, we want him dead. We want to capture him, dead or alive. Right? Krishna, right, when he kills somebody, he gets liberation. That's the difference. Yes? Yes. Yes, they, Jai Vijay appears as Jagai Madai, right? In the Chaitanya Leela. Okay? All right, let's continue. What then is to be said of devotees who always engage in the Lord's service with love and faith? If the demons get salvation, what to speak of you devotees? You are going to get, same thing was mentioned, you brought up Putana. Same thing. Putana came to kill Krishna, what happened? Okay, you can act like my mother. So the same point is made. If Putana got that, then you all nice, simple, sincere devotees, your reward, can't even imagine it. Just stay with the program and chant Hare Krishna. Everybody?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So Narada Muni now begins to explain the first of the three, because that was what was to be explained. The first of the three appearances, Hiranyakashipu. So the chapter 2 is called Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. As described in this chapter, after the annihilation of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha's sons and his brother, Hiranyakashipu, were very much aggrieved. Hiranyakashipu reacted very sinfully by trying to diminish the religious activities of people in general. However, he instructed his nephews about a history just to diminish their aggrievement. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the boar and killed Hiranyakashipu's brother, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu was very much aggrieved. In anger, he accused the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being partial to his devotees, and he derided the Lord's appearance as Varaha to kill his brother. He began to agitate all the demons and Rakshasas, and disturb the ritualistic ceremonies of the peaceful sages and other inhabitants of earth. For want of the performance of yajna, the demigods began wandering unseen on earth. And I was thinking, this theme, the Lord protects his devotees. I want to know if anybody thinks like I do. So Lord Varaha also came to protect his devotee. Who am I thinking of? Who did Varaha protect?
Mother Bhumi.
Yes! Would you agree with that? Does that make sense? Plausible? She had sunk to the bottom of the Garbhadaka ocean, and Prabhupada explains he came with tusks and an appropriate snout and scooped the earth up and then reinstated her and then killed Hiranyaksha. So, good. I'm glad you approve of that understanding. Thank you. And confirmed by Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai. Jai. After finishing the ritualistic funeral ceremonies for his brother, Hiranyakashipu began speaking to his nephews, quoting from the Shastras about the truth of life. To pacify them, he spoke as follows. And if you read the whole narration of what Hiranyakashipu says, it's straight Bhagavad Gita. That whole section, everything he says, is spot on Vedanta philosophy. It's just simply amazing. So here's a gist. My dear nephews, for heroes to die before the enemy is glorious. According to their different fruitive activities, living entities come together within this material world and are again separated by the laws of nature. We all are experiencing that. God brothers, God sisters, one by one, passing away, family members. We're all experiencing that. We should always know, however, that the spirit soul, which is different from the body, is eternal, unadjustable, pure, all-pervading, and aware of everything. When bound by the material energy, the soul takes birth in higher or lower species of life according to varying association. Same thing that's said in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Right? As you associate with the modes, you get a particular kind of existence. You have nobody to blame. You have nobody to blame but yourself for your lot in life. Because Krishna gives you options. Krishna gives you choice. We decide, yeah, today I want the mode of passion. Give me some mode of passion today. Okay, you chose the mode of passion. And Bhagavad Gita tells you what you're going to get. Or tomorrow I'll choose, you know, tomorrow I really like the mode of ignorance. Boy, it looks really good. You choose the mode of ignorance, Bhagavad Gita is going to tell you, this is the menu. Here's what you get. And if you choose the mode of goodness, it's all there. Krishna has nothing to do with the choice of the menu that we take. That's clear from Bhagavad Gita. My Arjuna, I've told you everything. You decide what you want to do. Krishna doesn't... This concept of free will, this is something that I very much appreciate about Krishna consciousness. When I read Bhagavad Gita, I get the feeling Krishna deals with us as gentlemen or as ladies. There's no force. Here are your options. Now you decide what you want to do. There's no twisting, no forcing. No, Krishna deals with you intelligently. Now you decide what you want to do, Baba. And then we get to choose. And then after that, okay, it's a different story after that. You go to the airport. There are so many airlines. And each airline, they're going so many different places. Up until the time you book your ticket, you can do anything. You book your ticket, okay, even after you book your ticket, you can change. But then comes the time when you're standing in line and the lady or man takes your ticket. Okay, you're sitting on the plane. The plane hasn't taken off. You can still, you know, I'm not going on this flight. But once the doors are closed, and then they tell you, fasten your seat. And now you're up in the air. No changing mind now. Of course, if you wanted to jump out, you could. But basically speaking, once you're in that plane and it's off the ground, wherever you're going, that's where you're going. That's our life. We chose Tamagoon Airline. We chose Rajagoon Airline. You chose ISKCON Airline. And where are you going? What is the... Like every airline has its motto, right?
Garuda.
Yes. Well, there is a Garuda Airlines. Yes. So the ISKCON Airlines, what does it say on the plane? Back home, back to Godhead. Only one direction. So you're in the right plane. Are you comfortable? Fasten your seatbelts. Let's continue. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare. By the association of devotees, so many things are generated, like the churning of the ocean of milk. By your association, things are going to come. And Jai Govinda, he was the one who pushed the Vyasasan up close. So I'm getting a lot of your, like I feel your presence, and I'm going, I better be careful here. I see how advanced you are. It's really incredible. Actually, I wanted to make that point. I've noticed this year, some of you, from what I saw last year, some of you have made lots of advancement from what I can see. So, I'm very much impressed. Thank you for your association. Vanchikalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. One's affliction by the conditions of material existence is the cause of happiness and distress. There are no other causes. And one should not be aggrieved upon seeing the superficial actions of karma. Hiranyakashipu then related an historical incident concerning King Suyagya, who resided in the country named Ushinara. When the king was killed, his queens, overwhelmed with grief, received instructions which Hiranyakashipu quoted to his nephews. And what did Hiranyakashipu explain? Yamaraj, that these queens, the sun was setting, they didn't do the funeral, the queens are lamenting. Yamaraj heard their cries, appeared to them as a young boy, and spoke to them, and enlightened them, and got them out of illusion. And the thought of Hiranyakashipu talking like this is simply amazing, that Hiranyakashipu is giving this great Bhagavatam funeral oration. Hiranyakashipu also related an account of a Kalinga bird pierced by the arrow of a hunter while lamenting for his life, his wife, who had also been shot by the same hunter. Yes, and it's a very similar story that appears in the Uddhava Gita also. In this particular account, the male Kalinga bird sees that his wife has been captured. And while lamenting, the hunter captures him. And it's very similar to a story in the 11th canto. Very similar. Birds, the mother bird was captured by the hunter and the baby birds. And the father bird is saying, without them, why should I even live? And the hunter comes and captures the whole family. So what's the purport? Don't waste your time lamenting, because you're next. And even, I've said this, I am asked to speak many times throughout the year at funeral ceremonies. And I always quote, I don't know who it's from, but I learned this line way back somewhere in Catholic school somewhere. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee.
Hemingway.
It's Hemingway. Sri Hemingway, huh? So, that bell means when there's a death in the community, the church bells chime. Ding. Oh, and people say, who died? Oh, Mr. McGillicuddy died. So, don't ask for who the bell tolls. It's tolling for you. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Time to wake up. And as I'm getting older now, like this year, I've done like 4 funeral ceremonies already this year. And in some of the cases, I knew the person. It wasn't just some stranger. I knew the person. And it's becoming more and more apparent and real. Yes, Nirantara, you're next. So it is time to get all the accounts settled with the Corleone family and surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. By narrating these stories, Hiranyakashipu pacified his nephews and other relatives and relieved them of lamentation. Thus, having been pacified, Diti, that's Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha's mother, Rushabhanu, that's Hiranyaksha's wife, engaged their minds in spiritual understanding. So now we come to chapter 3. Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. This chapter describes how Hiranyakashipu performed a severe type of austerity for material benefit, thus causing great distress throughout the universe. Even Lord Brahma, the chief personality within the universe, became somewhat disturbed and personally went to see why Hiranyakashipu was engaged in such a severe austerity. Now, what I didn't mention. At the funeral service, Hiranyakashipu is telling everybody, you know, there's no need to lament. Death is inevitable for everyone. And he even talks about one should be equipoised between friend and enemy. And then as soon as the funeral ceremony is over, actually he says it, I will avenge the death of my brother. Typical politician. Says whatever is expedient at the time, but actually doesn't believe a word he's saying. Because he became very, very angry with Lord Vishnu for killing his brother. In fact, if I remember the words correctly, at the funeral service, Hiranyakashipu, because usually there's a eulogy, you know, you glorify the person, even if he's not worthy of being glorified, still you glorify him. So, Hiranyakashipu was saying at the funeral, Lord Vishnu took the sign of the demigods and killed my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. As if that was a great quality. But I guess for demons it is. It's right there stated, who was so fond of sucking blood. My poor brother. Oh. So Hiranyakashipu became determined that he was going to kill Lord Vishnu. And it's mentioned, Lord Vishnu knew that Hiranyakashipu was looking for him. So Lord Vishnu was thinking, oh man, guy's going to be bothering me all the time. So Lord Vishnu said, where can I go where he'll never find me? Ah, I'll enter his heart. He'll never look for me there. So at one point, when Hiranyakashipu inhaled, Lord Vishnu inhaled and went to his heart, knowing he'll never look for me there, because Hiranyakashipu doesn't believe that God is in the heart. Right? So Lord Vishnu, he's the smartest of the smart. He knows everything. That's why he's super soul. Right? Okay. Hiranyakashipu wanted to become immortal. He wanted not to be conquered by anyone, not to be attacked by old age and disease. Oh, if he had that benediction, oh. And not to be harassed by any opponent. Thus, he wanted to become the absolute ruler of the entire universe. With this desire, he entered the valley of Mandara Mountain and began practicing a severe type of austerity and meditation. What was he doing? Standing on his toes. Now, anybody here ever done ballerina dance? You gotta, at some point, you stand on your tippy toes, right? Sometimes I look at that and I go, ow! How do you do that? He was doing that, right? Standing on his tippy toes with his hands stretched out for hundreds of years. That was the... unbelievable. Wow. Seeing Hiranyakashipu engaged in this austerity, the demigods returned to their respective homes. But while Hiranyakashipu was thus engaged, a kind of fire began blazing from his head, disturbing the entire universe and its inhabitants. Same thing happened with Dhruva. Dhruva was standing on one leg, and he was becoming so powerful in his austerities, his toe was pushing down the earth. And the final month of his 6 months austerity, Dhruva was taking a breath once every 12 days. The whole universe, the demigods were, oh, I can't breathe. And they went to Lord Vishnu to please save us. So the demigods in this instance, because Hiranyakashipu is standing like that, right? In due course of time, ants and insects, they eat all the flesh of Hiranyakashipu. And even though his entire skin is eaten, he's keeping the spirit soul within the skeleton and that fire. Because when you do severe austerities, tapa, heat, heat is produced, as we say in ISKCON, got to get fired up, Prabhu. It's coming, right? Lord Krishna told Brahma, the potential power is penance only. Krishna says, I create by penance. Everything is done by penance. That's why we follow how many regulative principles? 4 regulative principles. And chant 16 rounds. By doing that, we become fired up. We become really transcendental. So, Hiranyakashipu is maintaining, the spirit soul is staying there in the skeleton. And over time, the whole body is covered by an anthill. And the only thing visible is this fire coming from the skull. A kind of fire began blazing from his head. All the higher and lower planets became too hot to live on. The demigods, being disturbed, left their abodes in the higher planets and went to see Lord Brahma, praying to him that he curtail this unnecessary heat. The demigods disclosed to Lord Brahma Hiranyakashipu's ambition to become immortal, overcoming his short duration of life, and to be the master of all the planetary systems, even Dhruva Loka. Upon hearing about the purpose of Hiranyakashipu's austere meditation, Lord Brahma, accompanied by the great sage Bhrigu and great personalities like Daksha, went to see Hiranyakashipu. Brahma then sprinkled water from his kamandalu, a type of water pot, upon Hiranyakashipu's head. And it's mentioned, in that water pot is transcendental water. Very powerful water in that pot. Hiranyakashipu, the king of the Daityas, bowed down before Lord Brahma. So what happened was, Lord Brahma came on his swan carrier, and he could see the spot because of the fire. He took from his pot and he sprinkled. And when he sprinkled Hiranyakashipu, the anthill, Hiranyakashipu came out with a new rejuvenated body. This body was impervious even to thunderbolts. So now he's got this amazing body that is practically invincible. Hiranyakashipu offered obeisances again and again, offering prayers. When Lord Brahma agreed to give him benedictions, he prayed not to be killed by any living entity, not to be killed in any place, covered or uncovered, not to die in the daytime or at night, not to be killed by any weapon, or on land or in the air, not to be killed by any human being, animal, demigod, or any other entity, living or non-living. He further prayed for supremacy over the entire universe and requested the 8 yogic perfections, such as Anima and Lagima. And Lord Brahma gave him everything he wanted. The only thing he couldn't give him was something that he himself doesn't have, immortality. Because even Lord Brahma has to one day die. But Hiranyakashipu thought that he got his immortality in a roundabout way. He thought he had every base covered. He thought he had an ironclad contract. He thought he was so clever. Okay, I don't want to die like this, like this, like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. Sometimes in the material world, when they're doing these big sports contracts or movie stars or singers, the contracts are pages and pages long, because they have to make sure that every conceivable innuendo is covered. And even in these big profile marriages, they have these prenuptial agreements. And the lawyers, the language is very, very tricky. Because if one comma is in the wrong place, you could wind up losing everything. So Hiranyakashipu thought, I've got it covered. Now I'm immortal. So chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. This chapter fully describes how Hiranyakashipu obtained power from Lord Brahma and misused it by harassing all the living entities within this universe. Yes. Say, for instance, Srila Prabhupada had been given all the benedictions. He would have made the world completely Krishna conscious. He would have not have misused it, would he? No. But you'll see what Hiranyakashipu did. By severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu satisfied Lord Brahma and obtained the benedictions he desired. After he received these benedictions, his body, which had been almost entirely consumed, was revived with full beauty and a luster like gold. Nonetheless, he continued to be envious of Lord Vishnu, unable to forget Lord Vishnu's having killed his brother. Hiranyakashipu conquered everyone in the 10 directions and the 3 worlds and brought all living entities, both demigods and demons, under his control. Becoming the master of all places, including the residents of Indra, whom he had driven out, he began enjoying life in great luxury and thus became mad. And there's even a verse by Rishabdev, Nunam Pramatta Krute Vikarma, that when you overindulge in sense gratification, you become mad, you become crazy. Why? Because sense gratification is not fit for the conditioned soul. In fact, Vaishnava poets could call it poison. Sense gratification is poison for the soul because it does them in. All the demigods except Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva came under his control and began serving him. So even Narada had to sing for Hiranyakashipu. And it's mentioned, he had to glorify him. Narada Muni had to glorify Hiranyakashipu. But despite all his material power, he was dissatisfied because he was always puffed up, proud of transgressing the Vedic regulations. And what does Lord Chaitanya teach us? Always be what? Meek and humble. That's the secret to happiness. If you always keep yourself meek and humble, you'll be happy. You'll have no anxiety being meek and humble, because you'll be who you are. What am I? I am simply nothing more, nothing less than the insignificant servant of God. That's it. I'm not what I think I am or what I want to be. No. I'm just little, tiny, tiny Nirantara Das. That's it. I'm no big nothing. And if I can, as we say, if I can groove with that, then I'm happy. All the Brahmins were dissatisfied with Hiranyakashipu, and they cursed him with determination. Eventually, all the living entities within the universe, represented by the demigods and sages, prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakashipu's rule. Lord Vishnu informed the demigods that they and the other living entities would be saved from the fearful conditions created by Hiranyakashipu. Since Hiranyakashipu was the oppressor of all the demigods, oppressor of the followers of the Vedas, oppressor of the cows, the Brahmins, and the religious saintly persons, and since he was envious of the Supreme Lord, he would naturally be killed very soon. Hiranyakashipu's last exploit would be to torment his own son. What's his name? Prahlad, who was a Mahabhagavat, an exalted Vaishnava, then his life would end. Before telling the demigods this, you know what Lord Vishnu said? Just go back, hear and chant about me, and be happy. And the demigods, it's so simple. And what is Lord Chaitanya telling us? Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, just chant Hare Krishna. What is that book that we have distributed by the millions? Chant, be happy, whether you like it or not. Just chant and be happy. Hari Bol. When the demigods were thus reassured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone was satisfied, knowing that the miseries inflicted upon them by Hiranyakashipu would come to an end. Finally, Narada Muni describes the characteristics of Prahlad Maharaj, the son of Hiranyakashipu, and describes how his father envied his own qualified son. In this way, the chapter ends. When Narada is explaining the qualities of Prahlad, this very amazing narration, how Prahlad didn't like to play with toys and things. And sometimes he would feel the hand of the Lord on his hand. I'm waiting for that day. And Prahlad had no envy, no jealousy, and Prahlad was very concerned with others. He was a true, pure Vaishnava. In fact, there's one chapter that Prahlad is exalted amongst all devotees. Prahlad's characteristics, Narada Muni explains how wonderful a devotee Prahlad Maharaj was. Very submissive, very obedient, even to his demoniac father and teachers. He was not indignant. But, as we will see tonight, am I speaking tonight? Yes. Okay, tonight we'll hear of the character and the leela of Prahlad in terms of how Prahlad behaved. His example and his story here is so wonderful. And I think it's safe to say that for all devotees, Prahlad is very dear. Because I think devotees can really identify with Prahlad. Many of us came from situations and backgrounds, and we can identify in some small way with what Prahlad had to endure. I've met devotees also. They've told me their stories. I heard firsthand a devotee, how he got deprogrammed. And I met him the day he escaped the deprogrammers. And that night, I was with him, the temple president of Brooklyn Temple, Gopijana Vallabha, and he told the whole story of how he escaped and how he finally got back to the devotees. And then I heard another story a year or two later from another devotee. He was the temple president of ISKCON Houston, and he told me his story. He got deprogrammed, right? So, like Prahlad, they were torturing him. They brought in naked women, and they were trying to get him. I don't know if he had drugs, but they were trying. The first thing they tried to do is get you to fall down. So he was smart. So what did he tell the deprogrammers? You know what? You're right. I want to eat a steak right now. Let's go to a restaurant. I want to order a steak. So the deprogrammers took him to a big restaurant. They ordered the meal. Now, a restaurant is public, right? When the meal came, this devotee stood up, overturned the table, and said, I'm being held as a prisoner. Somebody help me. Police came and he was rescued. Huh?
Fantastic.
Yes, fantastic. Yes. Couldn't understand. Yes, fantastic. What? Amazing, right? He throws the table up and he joins the devotees. So, all of us, to some degree, when we hear tonight about Prahlad and what he had to endure, I'm sure there's a part of you that really can appreciate Prahlad Maharaj. Was that all right?
Yes.
You're happy?
Yes.
Are we fired up like Hiranyakashipu?
No.
All right. Now, to end, Mother Devavati brought some 5 prayers to Lord Nrisimha by Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. So let's read them. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur has written 5 beautiful prayers in Sri Navadvip Bhava Taranga for receiving the mercy of Lord Nrisimha. Who wants mercy of Lord Nrisimha? These prayers are certainly assurance to all sincere devotees that the worship of Lord Narasimha is purely in the line of aspiring love and devotion to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Those prayers are as follows. First one. Within my sinful heart, the 6 enemies headed by lust perpetually reside, as well as duplicity, the desire for fame, plus sheer cunning. At the lotus feet of Lord, what?
Narasimha.
I hope that he will mercifully purify my heart and give me the desire to serve Lord Krishna. Right? Because Lord Nrisimha removes the obstacles. Just as people worship Ganesh for removal of obstacles, we worship Lord Nrisimha for the removal of obstacles. Weeping, I will beg at the lotus feet of Lord for the benediction of worshiping Radha and Krishna in Navadvip, perfectly safe and free from all difficulties. When will this Lord Hari, everyone say,
Hari,
whose terrible form strikes fear into fear itself, ever become pleased and show me his mercy? Right? What do devotees do? There's so many stories. Devotees being attacked. What do they do? Nrisimhadev! They immediately take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev. That's what devotees do. You're taught that from the very beginning. I'm going to tell a little quick story after we read these. Even though Lord Narasimha is terrifying toward the sinful souls, he offers great auspiciousness unto the devotees of Lord Krishna, headed by Prahlad Maharaj. When will he be pleased to speak words of compassion unto me, a worthless fool, and thereby make me fearless? He will say, dear child, sit down freely and live happily here in Sri Gauranga Dham. May you nicely worship the divine couple, and may you develop loving attachment for their holy names. Oh, I love this one. This is my prayer. I love this one. By the mercy of my devotees, all obstacles are cast far away. With a purified heart, just perform the worship of Radha Krishna, known here as Sri Sri Radha Madana Mohan. For such worship overflows with sweet nectar. Saying this, will that Lord delightfully place his divine lotus feet upon my head? I will experience sublime love for the divine couple, Radha and Krishna, and undergo the ecstatic transformations called sattvika, falling on the ground, I will roll about at the door of Sri Narasingha's temple. So can I just tell one short story? This story was told to me by somebody many of you know. What's his name? Stanor. How many of you know Stanor Das? So when I was here in Vancouver in a previous life, Stanor once told me a nice story. He might have said it in the Bhagavatam class, and I've never forgotten it. So that was 1980 or 81. This is the story he told me. He said that once upon a time, the Gurukul children in Vrindavan, they went on a little walk in Vrindavan. And they were playing, and all of a sudden, in a tree, they look up and they see a half man, half bird. And they're all, oh. So one of the devotees starts singing, Namaste Narasinghaya, because they're afraid. And they think, oh, if we sing the Sringa prayers. So what did the half man, half bird do? Prahlada Lada Dayane. And the Gurukul kids said, ah! And they just ran all the way home. Obviously, this was a Brahma Rakshasa. And that the Sringa prayer, he knew. Whether it's true or not, you have to ask Stanur. But I love telling that story. I've never forgotten it. With that, I will see you tonight, and we will continue with this Prahlad Nisringa Katha. With your permission, please forgive my offenses. I am puffed up, arrogant, foolish, and a complete idiot. But you are so nice and kind that you allow me to vituperate. Vanchikapa Thirubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanang Pavanebhyo, ISKCON Vancouver Namo Namaha. Please.